On Tuesday, July 9th, we spoke with our buddy Tom Dudchick from the Capitol Report regarding what's going on with the state politics and whether or not we'll ever see that special session on tolls in Connecticut. We also spoke with a columnist who added her thoughts regarding a controversial Supreme Court decision regarding free speech and how it could affect what students wear on high school and college campuses here in and about Connecticut. And Aaron and I talked about a new level of service from Uber where you could pay to make sure your driver shuts up. Joining us, a gentleman who hosts a cerebral and incisive roundtable every Sunday morning at 10 on News 8 WTNH, the one and only Tom Dudchick.
Paul, that's cerebral is certainly the last thing that would come to my mind in watching my knucklehead panelists argue about every little thing. But, you know, I suppose I'll certainly take the compliment for that. But, yes, it is cerebral in some ways.
Yeah, well, the only reason I'm using those big words is hopefully someday you'll have me on as a guest commentator, and that can actually, you know, kill the reputation that your program has.
Well, I think you have a face for radio, Paul.
Oh, yeah, tell me about that, Tom. Thank you so much. Tom Dudchick's with us. Tom, how are you?
Great. Enjoying these dog days of summer, Paul. You know, I mean, this is when you know, the political class in Connecticut takes a breather and they can't get anyone to come back into special session because everyone's on a cruise or traveling here or traveling there. I was up on the Cape last week. I saw a few Connecticut legislative license plates.
Really?
Yeah, oh, yeah. They said to my wife, hey, who's that over there? Google that. So I said a district, you know. And, of course, my initial instinct is to, like, turn the car around and follow him into a bar somewhere.
You didn't end up at the Kennedy compound, did you?
No. I was up a little bit further, further on the Cape. So, which is you know, my idea of a vacation is just like working on my website, Capitol Report, like closer to the water and day drinking.
Tom, you're never a dull moment. So we're apparently going to have this special session to do some bonding issues, and then after that, Tom, all kind of signals are coming out here in the past couple of weeks. You and I have seen the same thing, that, you know, this toll session might not happen.
Yeah, I mean, if I were a betting man, I don't think anybody wants to be anywhere near the toll issue. And, you know, there's a lot of fatigue going on with the legislative session. People are kind of, you know, done with the issue. And as I said on my TV program, as you probably have said it, I lean over to my Democratic panelists. And I say, well, it occurs to me there's a Democratic-controlled House. There's a Democratic-controlled Senate. The governor's a Democrat. And every constitutional officer is a Democrat. It seems to me that if the Democrats wanted tolls, they could probably get tolls. So that has to tell you there are certain moderates in the caucus that won in marginal races last year that are really, really scared about putting their name on the line behind a toll vote. And I think that's what's causing it to stop. And then the governor keeps says he wants it to be a bipartisan, and the Republicans are saying, no, we don't want it bipartisan. We just don't want tolls. So there you have it, I think. And, of course, if they don't do a special session, they probably won't do it in the short session, which begins next February, and then no one's going to do it in an election year, Paul.
No. And you know, Tom, Patrick Sasser and his group, and I've talked to him plenty of times, you know, he dumps 100,000 signatures up there, I guess, verified. Okay, even if 50,000 of those won't change their party-aligned vote because of tolls, let's take half of it. If half of them did, Tom, and maybe another family member, a spouse, a daughter, a son did that, come on, 50, 70,000 votes in a small state like this? I mean, you and I both know how many legislative districts that could flip.
Oh, sure. And I, you know, the whole, you know, there is no doubt that there is a need for infrastructure repair in Connecticut. But I think the problem that we face in the state of Connecticut is nobody believes these people when they tell you we're going to take your money and we're going to set it aside and really fix the roads. I mean, there's a number of anecdotes. I remember when they passed legislation to put $10 on your motor vehicle renewal and put that in a dedicated fund, quote unquote, for the state parks. Well, legislators this year saw $30 million sitting there. They go, oh, thank you very much. We'll take that. And all of a sudden you're like, what, wait a minute. I'm paying $10 extra so I can park for free in the parks, confident that that money would go towards making sure that the toilets are updated, the snack shops are up there. There's lifeguards there. The beaches are clean. And they took that money, Paul. So, I mean, it's crazy. And the second thing is that nothing happens in Connecticut until something bad happens. And these legislators hear all these stories about bear hunting. No one wants to hunt the bears. Well, until someone gets killed by a bear. And I guarantee
yes.
you they will be in special session the next day passing legislation to basically wipe out bears in the state of Connecticut because that's how these people work. And the same thing, you know, God forbid we have a major structural problem with one of our bridges, or for instance, the mix, you know, one of the interchanges on 95 or the Mixmaster in Waterbury.
Yeah.
It doesn't fall in like Miami River Bridge, but just as upon inspection deemed to be structurally unsound.
Yeah.
No one died.
What happens?
No,
yeah.
And they say we're going to have to shut down 84 and Route 8 in Waterbury until we get this fixed.
Yeah, good luck with that. You know, Tom, you want to get people to pay attention in this state, I suggest, suggest a new cell tower on the Merritt Parkway. That's when everybody goes crazy, right? Everybody goes nuts. Man, I remember last time that happened, and it's just, you know, you look at the priorities and getting things done in the state, it's amazing what doesn't happen.
Oh, it's crazy. And I remember many moons ago when I was involved in state government, I was deputy chief of staff to, at that point, Governor Weicker, and we tried, and the state police had really, really bad dead zones in Litchfield County.
Yeah.
And they just couldn't hear, they couldn't get the radios to work, and so they needed more towers up there. And so you'd go to these public hearings, and they would say, no, we don't want these towers. You know, well, wait a minute, we can't get to you if you're dying. And they would say, well, that's okay, but I like looking out at that mountain over there. I don't want a tower on there. And that's a lot of, you know, that there's legislators who are dead, who are dire environmentalists. They want wind turbines. They want solar panels. Until someone says, "Well, we're going to put those in your district. It's going to be 20 acres, and it's going to be right there." And they go, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa! Wait a minute!" So it's really a shame, but you're right. That's the way it works most of the times.
And Tom, you know, we don't have, and I try to explain this to folks. Connecticut's one of, I think, 10 or 11 states. We don't have initiative and referendum. People say, well, why don't we have a ballot measure for this, ballot measure for that? I said our state constitution, for whatever reason, they don't think the people are smart enough. But, Tom, I got to tell you, no matter what happens with the toll thing, what Pat Sasser did and his group and all these other people is about, and I never thought this would happen, Tom, ever again. I never thought I would see people en masse now, at least without initiative and referendum in the state, if not stop this, put a serious kink in what might happen here. It's probably the closest thing we'll ever see to initiative and referendum in this state.
Well, I think you're right, and I you know, I go back and forth on initiative and referendum. I go back and forth on term limits,
mm-hmm.
and I think that, you know, there is initiative and referendum, and it's called election day.
Yes.
And if you don't like your state representative or state senator, they're voting against you, then you go out and you vote them out, and you bring your friends and you bring your neighbors and you knock on doors and you do that hard work of politics to basically make that change. And I think that you've seen a lot of this with this kind of grassroots level on tolls, and it does make the point that, I mean, I think that has made a big difference to really slow this thing down. And you know, once you slow stuff down in politics and you lose momentum, you know, then things change.
And, you know, Tom, looking at that issue and others, and I think what's always hampered Connecticut is that for a 3.5 million population state, we're relatively small, and these districts, and you have legislators who've been in there for so many years, getting so many money, so much money for, you know, oh, the new sandbox there, and the new traffic light there, and the new basketball court there, and they know everybody, that all you have to really do, in both parties, really, but more on the Democratic side, I'd say, Tom, is show up at enough rubber chicken Little League dinners, and you'll get elected. I think there's a disconnect, Tom, between, oh yeah, there's state rep so and so. He got my kids Little League field lights. But yeah, but aren't you upset at that latest tax increase? Yeah, but he's still a good guy. Or they're still a good gal. It's always the other guy, Tom.
That's true. And in polling for generation districts. So I mean, these things aren't done by chance.
Tom, to the national scene a little bit with the Connecticut connection here. Interesting story that you had posted a couple of links to, and we had talked about it here on the show. In fact, my producer, Aaron Johnson, used to cover Waterbury, cover Johanna Hayes for some time. interesting that she's gone through a staff shuffle there. And if you read that story that you highlighted, it's kind of, if you read between the lines, like it seems like her initial set of staffers might have told her, Tom, and if I'm reading this wrong, you tell me, they might have told her, hey, listen, you may not want to have lunch with the lefty caucus every day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I think if I were her staff, I would tell her to mind her knitting in Connecticut, and you know that's why we elect congressmen and women to take care of local issues. And a lot of what Congress does is pretty boring, Paul. You know, they have a flag flown over the Capitol, and they come home and they give it to a Little League troop. You know, they get Purple Hearts for veterans who have a problem getting their Purple Hearts through because of red tape. You know, it's a lot of blocking and tackling, and you know, when traditionally we look at our congressmen and women, we don't look at someone who has a national profile, and I think that she would like a national profile, and I think maybe her staff told her to spend more time in Waterbury than be at these conferences with Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah, because of course that's who you want to be seen with right now. That's who you want to be seen with. Yeah, Tom Dudchick, the guest from Connecticut Capitol Report, Capitol Report Online, ctcapitalreport.com, and the show every Sunday morning at 10. On WTNH and WTNH.com. Tom, the congressional districts here in this state, in particular Jim Himes in the 4th, right in our area here, read a couple of weeks ago, out of the blue, Tom, he came out one Monday morning and came out for impeachment. And I said, you know what, this smells. There's something going on here. And sure enough, a story came out the next day, and I think you had it too,
sure,
that he's on, you know, Jim Himes, you know, liked very well in his district. He's apparently on some target list for far progressives. They want to primary him.
Yeah, and I think that's the risk these days when you have an incumbent in either party that is locked in. The risk is always a primary, and especially a lot of Democrats in Greenwich and are feeling their oats because of the last election victory and the turnout against Trump. You know, they look at Himes as someone who came from a kind of a corporate background, and then I think they're looking at some of his progressive cred, and they're saying, well, I think we can probably do a little bit better. Now, having said that, he's a prolific fundraiser, and anybody who tries to run against him will probably have a very difficult time matching that money. But there is some discontent about him and his record. So I think you're correct in assuming. I think maybe that kind of messaging on impeachment may have directed at kind of quelling some of those fears.
Tom, what do you think Ned Lamont learned in his first legislative go-around in Hartford?
That's a lot harder than it looks.
Wait a minute. Yeah. This wasn't supposed to be that hard. Yeah, I won.
But until you get behind the mic and the red light goes on and it's you, and your first commercial break is in 5 minutes, and you got to sit there and talk and be entertaining. And I mean, it is very difficult work. So, I think Ned thought he'd be able to come as governor, put together a kind of a coalition of some of the Republicans and some of the more conservative Democrats to kind of buffer some of the more progressive stuff, give the progressives their minimum wage and their paid family leave, but yet, try to be a businessy kind of business-friendly governor, work with their moderate Republicans, work with the moderate Democrats. And it turns out the Republicans wanted absolutely no part of working with him, and the progressives said, thank you very much, we'll run the show here. So I think there's going to be a reboot in how they look at things going forward, and kind of, it's still a long way till the next election, so we'll see what happens.
Do you think he comes back and tries to maintain his distance again from that progressive caucus that's led by the state rep there in Hamden? His name escapes me, but you know who I'm talking about.
Yes.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
You need to have bold ideas and then tell your party what you want to do and make them do it. You can't sit around and have these feel-good meetings and, well, what do you think? Well, my door's open. Come in. You have to say, no, my door's open. I want you there tomorrow at 10, and we're going to bang this out. We're going to hammer it out. We're going to get a deal. And I think that's the kind of stuff that needs to be done. I think he has to prove to be a bolder leader.
You know, I had a contact at the Capitol that told me, and this is just what I was told. I can't verify this, but, I was talking to this person, and I said, what's the tenor going on up there? He goes, well, let me give you an example. I said, what? He goes, well, in the past, if there were budget talks, this person told me, they would say, well, the governor would request the legislative leaders to come to his office at a certain time, kind of what you said, Tom, to show who's boss. And that was publicized that the leaders were meeting with the governor in his office, yada, yada, yada. And I said, yeah. And my friend said, well, several times during this session, the governor's people went from their office to the leader's office. And I said, is that a big deal? They said, oh, yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal. And so, you know, so the governor needs to throw some warning shots. You know, you probably talked about there was a little budget rat snuck in for legislative pay raises.
And
I'm sure you had a lot of your call board was lit up about that one. Well, that's the kind of little thing the governor needs to, in a line item veto, just veto it. Just say, we're not going to do that. And we'll negotiate something. People are underpaid to a certain extent. Certainly not, you know, they're making more than most people who are listening to you right now, too. So, and the benefits are a lot better. So, but that's the kind of symbolic thing that he needs to do going forward to show people that he's in charge and not the legislature.
And finally, Tom, listen, J.R. Romano was reelected as state Republican leader. I hear people on this show and all the other shows I've ever done over the years, Republicans in this state grousing about this and that. You know, it's a blue state. It is what it is. But if you are a registered Republican in this state, and there's a few hundred thousand of them in the state, can you feel any other way but not represented in this state, either on the state or federal level with the House and Senate?
Well, that's a pretty easy question to answer because everything's very blue and there are a lot of Democrats controlling things. But, you know, it was the perfect storm last election, Paul, and I think that, I think you'll probably agree that most people believe that if Donald Trump wasn't on the top of the ticket and boosted that turnout from the Democrats in districts where they never saw that kind of turnout historically, with an incredibly unpopular governor like Malloy, it should have been a Republican year. So, and you may have had a Republican Senate, you may have had a Republican House. You know, we do elect Republican governors in this state. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, so I think, you know, we'll see what happens next time around.
I was just going to ask you, if you had a bet right now, I know we're a year and a half out, do you think that happens again?
Well, you see, that's the risk, you know. And so now, whether we're going to get into a Stefanowski and Stemmerman race again, or someone new will emerge, but you know, the problem is you can't just start this drumbeat the year of the election. It has to be a constant drumbeat, and the Republican Party, in many cases, has been absent from the fight.
You don't have that mother's milk of money; it ain't there, right?
There you go.
All right, Tom Dudchick. Tom, thanks, buddy. We'll be in touch.
Well, I'll look forward to seeing you again. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Bye bye. Tom Dudchick, ctcapitalreport.com, former staffer for Governor Lowell Weicker, former legislator, and also hosts the Capitol Report Sunday mornings, 10 a.m. with him and his panel of guests on WTNH News 8. All right. We had a really interesting Supreme Court decision come down a couple of weeks ago that could actually affect what you see kids wearing all along the streets of Bridgeport and maybe in Fairfield, Westport, Southport, all up and down the Gold Coast here, Fairfield County, and maybe even in schools. Now, a lot of free speech advocates are cheering this, but some are saying, nah, it's not a really good idea. Our next guest is president of the Speech First organization promoting free speech on college campuses, but she's not a fan of this decision. Nikki Neely joins us. Nikki, hi. It's Paul here in Bridgeport. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Well, appreciate it. Talk a little about your concern here, and in this case where it was a brand of clothing that can easily be misconstrued as an obscenity, correct?
Sure, yes. So it was a case a few weeks ago, Ianchi v. Brunetti, and the Patent and Trademark Office had a prohibition on immoral or scandalous names and trademarks. And the Supreme Court took issue with that. They said that it was a viewpoint-based discrimination for banning this trademark. It was a clothing company spelled F-U-C-T, and they said this is the kind of thing where the judgment can't, you know, the government currently says that names that denigrate society's sense of rectitude and morality or defy its sense of decency and propriety can't stand. And the Supreme Court said absolutely not. The fundamental principle of free speech law is that the government can't penalize or disfavor or discriminate against ideas based on that. And so they struck it down. And, you know, as you talked about, what the implications might have for campus are a lot of campus speech codes make viewpoint judgments. And so this could be a game changer for student speech rights, but, you know, it remains to be seen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we see these cases all the time, I think there was a couple of Connecticut cases about this a few years ago, Nikki. But so now what does this do to, say, a public school system anywhere here in Connecticut or anywhere else in the country where if a kid goes in with one of these, you know, friends you can trust, wink, wink, T-shirts, what's an administrator now to do?
Well, the administrators should, they should be, they can't be banning things based on the viewpoint it conveys. And so, I mean, there have been other Supreme Court cases in the past. There was one from the 60s where there was a guy who walked into a courthouse who had a jacket that said, S the draft on the back, and that was considered obscene, and he took it all the way up, and the Supreme Court said, no, you know, even though it's obscene, it can still stand. So on public school campuses, this should be allowed to stand, although certainly it remains to be seen. It still makes people uncomfortable, and so will schools actually uphold that, you know, some may, some won't. And so that'll, you know, we'll have to be duking it out and enforcing that.
Didn't we used to decide this, Nikki, and the guest is Nicole Neely, head of the Speech First organization. Didn't we used to decide these things on what was called like local standards or local morals? You remember those cases?
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, it's been interesting to see how the boundaries of this have shifted and shifted and shifted. And that's why, you know, the schools are not outright banning, you know, naughty words these days. Mm-hmm. What I think schools have started to do is they started to allot themselves broad discretionary power to pick the winners and losers. And so a lot of schools now will have speech codes where they'll say, you know, you're not offensive speech, offensive or harassing conduct, rude emails are banned on different campuses. And so, you know, what is that? I mean, what is offensive to one person might not be offensive to another. It's very much in the eye of the beholder. And so it gives the school this very, very wide discretion to determine, you know, who gets in trouble and who doesn't. And sadly, where we see this, what we see happening as a result of that is that, you know, the school is picking winners and losers. And that often ends up being political speech and religious speech, where students end up losing out. And so students are scared because they really don't know what they can and can't be in trouble for. There is no clear standard.
Nikki Neely,
so this gives a clear standard.
You know what, Nikki, I was talking to my producer here on the break there while we had John Hold, and he's a former newspaper reporter, and he covered a case like this in Connecticut at a local high school where the high school folk, and I don't know exactly what the shirt or jacket said, but the high school folk said, yeah, you got to get rid of it because it disrupts the learning environment. Do you think this case might affect any of that as far as what a disruption is in a learning environment?
Yes and no. I mean, there was a really famous case, I guess 50 years ago in 1969, the Tinker v. Des Moines, where it was students who were wearing black armbands to high school, and that was considered disruptive back then. They were mm-hmm. showing solidarity, you know, against the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
There is a little bit of discussion whether, you know, well, students who are in high school, you know, they're still kind of, you know, they're still under the care of their parents, or students who are in college, like they are essentially, they're functionally adults. And so should college students, you know, receive extra rights, special treatment, special scrutiny as compared to high school students? Because, yeah, I think once you start saying if something is disruptive, then, again, schools start to allot themselves very, very broad discretionary power.
What do you think should have been done? I know you're not real comfortable with this ruling here, and even I looked at it and went, it's a little broad here. Nikki Neely, what do you think should have been done, if anything, different with this ruling?
No, you know, I mean, I think the ruling is okay. It starts to, the fact that it was a 6-3 opinion, I think, is also notable, right? It wasn't one of those skin of the teeth things. It was authored by Justice Kagan. And so I think that's encouraging because, you know, as we have seen, for want of a better term, progressives move away from support for the First Amendment. For Justice Kagan to say that the government can't penalize or disfavor or discriminate against ideas that are conveyed, that's a really strong signal. It's something that I really hope more politicians, frankly, pick up on. So, you know, would I have liked it to be more strident? I would love it to have been a 9-0 opinion. But, I mean, in the absence of that, I'll take it because hopefully we'd like to get to the Supreme Court someday. And I'd like them to say, you know what, a lot of these codes that we're seeing enforced on college campuses these days are flagrantly unconstitutional.
Well, what you got to do is use a couple of schools here in Connecticut, Nikki. Use Yale and use Wesleyan in Middletown, two of the most. If you want a petri dish for anything, you're welcome to come up here and do it there, okay?
Thank you.
Thanks, Nikki. Appreciate it. Nikki Neely, head of Speech First. We appreciate the time. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Nicole Neely with us. My producer, Aaron, and I just, you know, there's some things that pop up in the news that you just listen to and you laugh. Honestly, we both looked at each other on this one, and we started to just laugh on cue as if we had rehearsed this thing for weeks. I don't know whether you heard our fine newscast. Top of the hour there, they were talking about yet another level of Uber. And Uber, of course, is a favorite of the millennial crowd. And look, let's be upfront about this. Uber and Lyft offer a utility that in many areas, you know, it's tough to get a cab. I mean, it's not like you're in New York or Chicago or L.A. or whatever, or Miami. You can just, you know, stand on the corner, raise your hand, and then there's a cab there in 5 minutes. You know, for areas of the country like Connecticut, I mean, yeah, there are cab companies around here, but you try to get a cab in Bridgeport, you're going to get a cab. Who's going to come just passing by on the corner? Rarely. So you use Uber, you use Lyft, which is great. It's how people make some money on the side. However, I had to laugh. Aaron and I just looked at each other and started to laugh on cue without saying anything when the story popped up top of the hour in the news that Uber, now they're calling it Uber Comfort. Uber Comfort. There's a new Uber, and I will be right up front with this. I've never taken an Uber. I've never had the occasion to need to. My car is never, knock on wood, I shouldn't say this, my car is never broken down anywhere in this area that I need one. I either take public transportation or take a cab. That's it. However, Uber Comfort lets you request now extra leg room and crank up the AC before you get picked up. Uber is rolling out a new way to request extra legroom, quiet cars, and amenities that are typically associated with its higher-priced Uber Black service. Dubbed Uber Comfort, the new service will be available today in over 40 markets in North America. That's nice. Uber Comfort is presented as a whole new product category in the app, alongside Uber X, Uber Pool, Uber Black SUV, and Uber XL. Think of it as a fancier than Uber X, but less fancy than Uber Black. It's also more expensive. Riders can pay up to 20 to 40% more than a typical Uber X trip, according to a salesperson. So you're telling me that I'm going to pay 20 to, and I mean just me, I don't do it, but if I was to do it, so this new category, Uber Comfort, is going to charge me 20 to 40% more to have the air conditioner on before they pick me up and to request extra legroom.
You know why Uber's doing this, Paul?
Well, they need the money.
And people are going to pay it.
And they're going to pay it.
They're going to pay it. This is like I was saying, I said to you during the break, God. It is getting so hard to defend millennials. And I'm 26 years old.
You guys.
And I mean, every time I think I'm starting to get a couple steps forward,
no.
Something like this comes out. Because there are people that that are going to pay it. They don't want to talk to their driver. They don't want to. And the thing that gets me is the AC, because all you have to do hey, I'm getting kind of chilly back here. Do you mind?
Turn down
the AC.
But now because they want the car pre-chilled, it's kind of like preheating an oven or pre-chilling the wine. So I guess if I'm reading this right, Uber Comfort is going to have you pay 20 to 40% more than a typical trip typical Uber X trip. There's so many Ubers. I'm so freaking confused.
Well, it's based off of size. So, like, yeah. I know Uber, I want to say XL.
Okay.
It's like if you have, like, four, six people or six or eight people. So, yeah. Like, they make sure you get an SUV as opposed to a sedan.
What's next? Do they have an Uber Hookers? So, can you order? Because I don't do Uber. Do they have an Uber level where you can just request a certain genre of prostitute? In the back. They haven't gotten that one yet?
No, that one might still be in research and development.
Okay. So Uber X is not quite as expensive as Uber Comfort. All right. And not anywhere near Uber Black. So you're gonna pay 20% to 40% more. All right. So let's see, you can have extra leg room. All right. And they crank up the AC before they pick you up. Now, here's my question number one. If you're providing a driver service to somebody and it's hot outside, wouldn't you think, I mean, is Uber telling its drivers, no, keep it like, listen, we want to make more money, so we're going to put in another tier of service here. So when you pick up this person, make like it's the locker room after a four-quarter football game. Make sure there's just a stench going on in there so we can charge people more to turn up the AC. Oh, my God, folks. Unreal. And here's the other one. Uber Comfort customers will also have the power to request a conversation-free ride from the driver. Previously, quiet mode was only available to Uber Black customers. So you had to pay more to tell the driver to shut the up. Wow, this is great stuff. Yeah, okay. Depending upon who you talk to, Uber's quiet mode is either a useful tool for riders who are deaf or hard of hearing, women who don't want to have potentially creepy conversations with male drivers, or people with social anxiety, or it's a rude way for rich snobs to silence their drivers with just a tap on the app. Well, yeah, that's fine. You shouldn't have to pay for it. You shouldn't have to pay for it. Oh, my God. You millennials, and I love you. I'll tell you. How about a hand for millennials out there? Oh, my God. Wow. Drivers who want to accept Uber Comfort ride requests will need to meet several requirements, including a 4.85-star average rating and a car that's a maximum of 5 years old. So you mean a 73 Chevy Nova isn't gonna cut it with... oh, man. The addition of Uber Comfort is the latest tweak to the company's core ride-hailing business since Uber went public earlier this year. Now, and you know why they're doing this. It says it right here. The company shares plunged 11% after the May IPO. Everybody bought into it, and the value went down. Wow. Okay. So there's now Uber, God bless you millennials, because now you use this thing so much that they now have a price point where you can have the car pre-chilled, and you can tell your driver to just shut the hell up, which sometimes is a decent thing, I guess, and you're going to pay for it, too, 20 to 40% more, right? From the same people, from the same group of voters who say that America is such an awful place. All right. So I just have a friend of mine message me on Facebook who's listening, my buddy out there, one of my friends listening. Here's the question. What's the cost level for Uber? Do they have a level where the driver won't kill you?
You know, some of the best people that I've ever, like, riding Ubers, I've met some really interesting people that are great.
I don't.
But it's there are some people that are kind of out there. I will say that.
There's always that one. You get those stories, right? There's always that one you know, right? We'll hear it on the news here, wherever else I'm working. Our lead story, and a suspected Uber driver suspected of knifing four young college girls to death. Listen, folks, I'm just being tongue-in-cheek about this. I know you probably used Uber or Lyft, or I know there's another ride service starting up now. But have you had any weird experiences with Uber or Lyft? And my son uses it all the time. His mom uses it. They like it. My son likes it because he's in New York, and a lot of times it's difficult in New York, you know, to get a cab, especially after, you know, certain times on a Friday or Saturday night when he's leaving his job on Broadway doing that stuff there, and, you know, all the high rollers are in the cabs, and he doesn't want to pay for a car service. So I've never taken it. I know people that swear by it. Me, I'm a cab guy. I'm a grungy, greasy, dirty New York cab guy. You know? They Oh, man. The gig economy. You know what the weird thing about Uber is, honestly? And if you don't believe me, if you don't take my word for this, look it up. Do you know, and I don't know whether this has actually changed or not, but in Uber's business model, you know, they lose. And this is probably why they're doing this. This is probably why they have a different level for a nicer car, a different level for a quiet ride now, a different level for a cool car. Pretty soon they'll have a level for a car that has gas in it. The next level will be for a car that the cops won't chase. There'll be an Uber probation level where you can select a car with a driver without a criminal record. They'll have that too. They'll have an Uber level, Aaron just mentioned, for no marijuana haze in the car. But you know, they're doing all this because as omnipresent as Uber has become, they still lose money every ride. Isn't that amazing? They lose their business model. Think about this now. Every time you get into an Uber, okay, round here, Bridgeport, Fairfield, Westport, going out, Gold Coast, Friday night, yeah, baby. You know, you're those, you know, lower Gold Coast, Fairfield County, drunken white rich kids down there, you know, the kind that completely destroy a quiet car on Metro North when they get on. You know, the kind that gets on and, you know, Fairfield Metro, Greens Farms, Row 8, Cos Cob, you know, with the loafers, the topsiders, and just as obnoxious and drunk as all hell.
You big cold-blooded dummy.
You just want to get up out of your chair and just go to Biff and just give him a Joe Frazier right hand. Right, well, you just shut up and sit down. Anyway, but no, every time you get into an Uber, the company loses money. They lose between like $1 and $2 on every ride. After they pay the driver, after they back out whatever taxes, the tip, and all that kind of stuff. Uber is designed, okay, to not turn a profit until the cars become autonomous. I don't know whether you know that. There will be a day. Uber's business model is eventually to have all these autonomous cars on the road. I'm not kidding. Look it up. They make no bones about it. They have said that their eventual business model is to be able to turn a sizable profit. I mean, can you imagine what they will do if they didn't have to pay the drivers? And they just used autonomous cars that would, you know, get a short in the computer box and ram into a light pole? And you'll be great on the way there, you know? But yeah, so getting back, if you're an Uber, if you fancy Uber, you now have Uber Comfort. You can request extra legroom, quiet cars, and you can request a conversation-free ride. Don't look at me. What do you hear about those Hollywood stars? It's like in their contract, like none of the stage people or hands are supposed to, like, you know, so don't look me in the eye. No idle conversation, you know? Honestly, I might do that just for the hell of it. I, Aaron, you and I should just like one night after the show, if it's like, you know, if it's like a Thursday or Friday night, we should just like go get dinner and we're going to order one of those Uber Comfort cars. And I'm going to say, make sure it's cool. Open the door. look down at the ground when you pick us up. No,
that's where it's gonna go. People are gonna start doing requests. They're gonna be like, I want to make sure that the driver can keep one hand on the steering wheel, one hand on his head the whole time. Make sure that he's looking north northwest the entire ride.
Do not make eye contact with Mr. Johnson and myself. Is that understood? Oh yes. Oh yes.
Oh my God.
Anyway, well, like you said, Aaron, I'm pleased, so pleased that you're on this show because you're honest. You again can say that your generation, your millennials here, you're making it oh so. You know what you do? You guys and gals, I love you. You work your tails off, but you make it really easy for me some days to just sit back and laugh. See, I like a regular cab. In fact, the last cab ride I took in New York a couple of weeks ago, I was running a little late for my train. It's a true story. I'm not kidding you. And this is like the second or third time this has happened. I got in, and the guy says, "Hello, sir. Where are you going?" I said, "Well, Grand Central, please." "Okay, thank you very much. I'll have you there in a moment." Well, I shut the door. All right? Shut the door in the back. I'm in the back seat. You would have thought, okay, that the minute I shut the door, you would have thought that the driver of my cab was a cop, and he had just heard the call, "Shots fired, officer down." Because as I shut that door, the tires chirped. He pulled away from it's rare that I get pressed back in my seat, in the back seat. And he's turning, I swear to God, he made a turn, 6th Avenue onto 48th Street, the tires chirped on the turn. And I'm sitting here in the back going, okay, and then, you know, he literally pulls like a donut coming up to Grand Central. And he's like, "Would this be fine, sir?" And I'm like, "Yes, this is good." See, you probably don't get that with an Uber. You don't get the real feeling that you're in a police car heading to a scene where a fellow officer was shot.